Stella. 30 seconds.
1 minute.
Still till 8? There's a certain difficulty in being precise about the time.
For these purposes, I'm leaving Reshebet.
Reshebet? Well, you can look at your computer. Doesn't it give you the time from heaven? So, the parsha, we're getting back to Parshiyot, is Shmini. Shmini is, the parsha that talks about kosher food and non-kosher food, these kind of animals, those kind of animals. We're not going to deal with that tonight. What we're going to deal with is the Torah's description of the story of Nadav v'Avihu. Nadav v'Avihu are the two of the four sons of Aaron HaKohen, who were in line, of course, to inherit. They themselves became Kohanim, and they were the inheritors, would have been the inheritors of the mantle of Aaron HaKohen, except they did something wrong, and they died. They were punished, and they were killed. This is described in the Torah as follows. If you look at the sheet, the pasuk says, "Ve'ichu b'nei Aaron Nadav v'Avihu, ish machdato." Right, a machta is a frying pan. Fancy word for frying pan is censer. I never heard anybody use that word, but it's like appears in the King James version of the translation of the Bible, which is more or less, until Kaplan came along, the translation that everybody uses, and sort of kind of like the Koran translation, the Koran English translation is basically King James. It's all King James. So they like the word censor. Mishmachdato vayitnu bahen esh. They put a fire in this frying pan. Vayasimu aleha ketoret. Ketoret is an incense sacrifice. It was a certain formula. This kind of spice, and that kind of spice, and you put it all together, and it made a nice smell. Right, that's a ketoret. A ketoret is a sacrifice that had a nice smell to it. For some reason, the ketoret is seen as being very pleasing to heaven. It somehow the Rambam and the Mor Devuchim has a much more pragmatic approach to the ketoret. The Rambam says that since the Beit HaMikdash was a place where many sacrifices were given, and sacrifices produce blood, it was not only the blood that you use as part of the procedure of the sacrifice, but animals have a lot of blood, and you've got to drain off the blood. So if you're in a place where they're draining off blood, you know, probably some of it doesn't get drained off. And in a short time, the smell of blood can become a little annoying. So the Rambam says the ketoret was the overwhelming smell, right? The smell that it was like perfume. You know, it was a smell on top of a smell, right? It doesn't, like the underneath smell is still there, but if you like keep blasting away with the over smell, so you kind of only smell that. So that's the ketoret. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim says it was pragmatic. But we see the ketoret also as being a very significant act. The Kohen Gadol and Yom HaKippurim went to got a ketoret, they went to the Kodesh Kodesh. It's like very, but it makes sense to say that Nadav v'Avihu were looking for something that was significant to do in the Beit HaMikdash. They knew there was such a thing as a ketoret, but for them, at this time, v'akrivu l'vnei Hashem esh zara. Zar, the word zar means, in modern Hebrew, means foreign. But you know that in the book of Vayikra, it says several times, hazar Hakarev Yumat. The czar, the foreigner, who comes close, who brings a korban, meaning if you bring a korban and you don't have the right to bring it, you don't, shouldn't bring it, what are those words, right? That's called a czar. A czar is somebody who oversteps a boundary, right? There's a boundary, and the boundary says that only a kohen gadol on Yom HaKippurim can go into the Kodesh Kodashim. If somebody else wanted to do that, he would be considered a czar. So an Eish Zara is true, it's a non-necessary fire. But in the way that the book of Vayikra teaches us to think about things, it was overstepping a boundary. It wasn't that there was no Eish Zara. There was no ketoret brought in the Beit HaMikdash. Certainly there was. And there was a ketoret brought every day in the Beit HaMikdash. But there were boundaries. There were times when it should be done and times it should not be done. So if they brought in Eish Zara, it meant that they were overstepping a boundary. And they were doing something that the Beit HaMikdash was dedicated to avoid, which is that the Beit HaMikdash is a place of boundaries, right? There's an inner boundary, there's an inner Kodesh Kadashim, there's a Kodesh, there's a Chatzer, there's the problem of Tumah V'Tahara, which we learn about starting in this parasha, but Tumah V'Tahara said, if you're Tameh, then there's a boundary that you cannot step over. And the Ramban explained to us, that this idea of boundaries was born for Am Yisrael at the time of Matan Torah. That when Moshe Rabbeinu came down to Bnei Yisrael in Perek Yutet in Shemot, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down for the first instructions about what Bnei Yisrael are going to do. So there were certain instructions they had to go to the mikveh, they had to clean their clothes, they had to act in a certain way, but primarily they had to understand that they could not go beyond the boundary, whatever the boundary would be, right? And the boundary in this case was the foot of Har Sinai. Only Moshe Rabbeinu and his particular entourage could go further, and finally they also had to stop. And then only Moshe Rabbeinu could continue to the top of Har Sinai. So this is parallel, according to the Ramban, but I think it makes good sense by the Beit HaMikdash, where the Kohen Gadol is the only one who can do this, other Kohanim and the other ones could do that. People who have to bring a Korban can bring a Korban, but if you don't have to bring a Korban, you can't. You can't bring a Korban that you don't have to bring. So the Ramban says, it's all about boundaries. It's all about boundaries. This is the Ramban. The Ramban I'm referring to is the Ramban at the beginning of the parasha of Truma, at the end of the book of Shemot. That, and this is, you know, this is an interesting lesson, interesting idea, because in modernity, the word boundary has become very much part of educational theory and psychology, right? I mean, like what does it mean to grow up? Like what changes take place between a baby, a child, and a young adult? Well, the baby, and the even when the baby gets a little bigger, doesn't know so clearly about boundaries. It doesn't know. And then he meets up with, he or she meets up with toilet training, which you probably have heard of now and then. Now that is, if you like have a Freudian inclination, you understand that creates your whole world view. You know, there's everything. And when you grow up, either you can like take it or you can't. Right? Then somebody comes and says to you, blah, 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 and you say, nothing? So that means you are well toilet trained. But if you lose it, Every time somebody says something, so then there was a problem at that stage in your development. So boundaries in modernity have become very important, but it's important to understand also that according to the Ramban, the nation of Israel, right, Am Yisrael, was made into a nation at Matan Torah by teaching them that the world that they were moving into was a world of boundaries. And we can say that the interesting thing, about the boundaries in the book, the Parsha of Shmini, the boundaries of you can eat these animals, but you can't eat those animals. It's important to understand that those distinctions have absolutely no meaning to us. There's no way to understand why you can't eat a hamburger made out of camel meat, and you can eat a hamburger made out of cow's meat. There have been attempts in the last 3,000 years to explain this difference, but they have all failed. The only thing that we can say, I think, securely is that, you know, science is about making distinctions. In other words, before you can talk about it, you have to make distinctions. You have to have a table of elements in order to have chemistry. You have to be able to say, like, so what are we working with, right? You have to make distinctions. That the distinctions that we make are based on principles that we can understand. But the Torah makes distinctions based on principles that we cannot understand. We don't understand why somebody is Tomei and somebody else is Tahor. We understand the rules, but we don't understand how it works. We don't understand how, if a person comes into contact with a dead body, that therefore he can't go into the Beit HaMikdash. What kind of sense is that? There's a mitzvah. If a person sees a mate mitzvah on the road, and there's no one to take care of him, so he's obliged to help in the burial of that mate mitzvah. So like, a person has come from doing a great mitzvah, he goes to the Beit HaMikdash, he knocks on the door, and that, you know, and the thing, you know, have this electronic gate going into the Beit HaMikdash, you try to go in, it starts ringing. And it says, you're Tameh. You can't go. There's no way for us to understand that. But since the Torah is somehow also seen as divine intelligence, right, the kind of the God's way of looking at things, so we understand. We understand. Just like we make distinctions, and those distinctions are important to us, apparently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also makes distinctions. And let us in on it, right? Say, listen, I'm doing you a favor. I'm telling you about Tomei the Tahor. I didn't have to. Kodesh Baruch didn't have to tell us about Tomei. But Kodesh Baruch is doing us a great favor because distinctions create the world in which you live. So if you could distinguish between various chemicals, if you could distinguish between physical events, so that's great. It makes life, like it integrates you into the world in which you are living. Tumah v'Tahara, limits in the Beit HaMikdash, integrate you more into the world of God, of God's understanding. And so the Torah says, just like there are distinctions that exist for people who are scientists, who are trying to understand the world and kind of organize it in their minds, well, there are distinctions that God has, like Tumah v'Tahara, or the difference between a camel and a cow. I mean, you may not see that there's a difference, but truly there is a difference. So Eish Zarah, we'll go back to the Eish Zarah. Eish Zarah is Hazar HaKarev Yumat, that the distinction, that the boundary has been abrogated by Nadav v'Avihu. And then it says, Asher lo tziva ota. It was Asher lo tziva ota. And that's the answer. Like, when is it all right? When can you go across the boundary? When God says, do it. And when God says, don't do it, you can't go across the boundary. So this seems really straightforward, except that they say, Eish v'lifnei Hashem v'tochal otam, Vayamutu lifnei Hashem. The punishment was extremely severe. We understand that Mekoshesh Eitzim, the one who collected the trees on Shabbos, he wasn't punished right away. He wasn't the Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know. He turned to God. What should we do? What's the din? Right here, right from heaven, poof, it comes down, the fire comes down, and the Dav Aviv are dead. Why the severity? Why was it that this was so important for heaven that Nadav Aviu should be killed on the spot during the act in which they were bringing this Eish Zara? And then you have like what is clearly the most interesting pasuk in the parasha, maybe in the Chumash of Vayikra, maybe in the entire Torah, right? But that I leave to you. The pasuk says, Vayome Moshe Aharon. So here's Aharon. He's just lost his two oldest sons. What were they doing, the two oldest sons? Let's say they were trying to do a good thing. They weren't robbing a bank. They weren't doing something that was obviously prohibited. They were kind of saying, well, it's true that there's a boundary, but maybe the boundary is not always that important. Maybe enthusiasm knocks down the boundary. Maybe devotion knocks down the boundary. Maybe, you know what they call today, frumkeit. Maybe frumkeit knocks down the boundary. That was the Nadav Aviu. Here Moshe Rabbeinu is looking at his brother Aaron, and both of them are bereft. Both of them are mourners, Moshe and Aaron, but Aaron, of course, is the father. He's the greater mourner. He says to his brother, Moshe Rabbeinu, he knows the whole Torah, he knows Torah Shabbat, he knows Torah Shabbat, he knows everything, he knows the right thing to say. So what does he say to Aaron? He says, Hu Hashem Dibei Hashem Lemur. Oh, he says to him, oh, this is a good shtickle to, I learned the Tosus. He says to him, I just learned the Tosus. Can you imagine? Here's Aaron, he has two sons lying dead in front of him, and Moshe Rabbeinu is going to go to tell him like a drasha that he heard, a chiddush. You know, they call it a chiddush. You know, here, do you feel good? Here's a chiddush for you. What's the chiddush? The chiddush is, Hu Hashem Dibei Hashem Lemor. God has already said this. That's what it sounds like the pasuk says. Dibei Hashem Lemor. Lemor introduces a quote. A quote which is non-existent, at least in the Chumash. We never heard of this quote. But the words are, Bekrovai Ekadesh. Bekrovai Ekadesh. Those who are closest to me, Ekadesh. God speaking. I will be sanctified. What is I will be? What does Kadosh mean? I mean, that's like also one of those words. Kadosh means don't go there, it's Kadosh. Right? In other words, God is there. God is there. You can't just go. You can't just go to see God. This was what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Shal na'alecho, mi'arad lecho. Because the place that you... I'm talking about the burning bush. Remember the burning bush? Something special. Abraham talked to God. He didn't have to take off his shoes. Yitzchak talked to God. Yaakov talked to God. Moshe Rabbeinu take off his shoes. I mean, I don't know, taking off shoes, it means like, you know, it's significant. You don't just, like, shoes are full of, as they said when the Malachim came to see Avram Avinu, the shoes were full of avak avodah zarah, right? The dust of idolatry. So I don't know, so you can metaphorize it a little bit. You know, people walk, and they walk here. Like, you go someplace before you figure out you shouldn't be there, right? You know, like you go to Las Vegas, and there's a sign that says, whatever it says, one-armed bandit. You say, well, let me go see if that's really it. You know, like, the sign, it says, 50 meters high, it says, gambling. You say, I can see what it's like, you know. You go and say, oh, it's really bad, and you run out, you know. But meanwhile, your shoes get full of all that bad stuff. So that's a vaka of a bizarre. It's like even Malachim, You can't avoid it. You can't avoid it because wherever you go, there's something, you know, there's something you have to protect yourself from. So, avakavodazara, bikrovai ekadesh, those who are close. So that's what kodesh means. Kodesh is God is there, so you can't go there. There's something, I mean, it's similar to the idea of boundaries, but it's very much about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? The word Kadosh. Kadosh, God, God is there. The Krovai Kadesh. My Kedusha will be proven by those close to me. Right? Anyway, I mean, look, in all honesty, there's no way to understand what that means. I mean, you have to look at Rashi. Al pnei kol ha'am ekaveit. Ekaveit. And because of Krovai Ekadesh, then God will be honored. Right? Pnei kol ha'am ekaveit vayido maharo. Aaron hasn't said anything. So what is vayido maharo? He kept quiet. Aaron kept quiet. What was he keeping quiet about? I mean, he heard this word from Moshe Rabbeinu. He liked it, he liked it. He didn't like it. But what's Vayidol Maharon? What does that mean? What does it mean? So let's see how Rashi explains it. It's not even Pasuk Gimel. Hu asher diber. Echan diber. So Rashi says, and this is what Rashi, of course, is based on the Midrash, as we will see. Everything in Rashi comes from the Midrash. He says, Echan diber. V'no'adeti shama livnei Yisrael v'nikdash b'chvodi. Hashem is talking to Moshe Rabbeinu about the Mishkan and the Ohel Moed in the Mishkan. V'no'adeti. Right, the word v'no'adeti, the root is vav ayin dalet. It means to a meeting place. Right, sometimes the Ohel Moed is it's the same word. Moed is vaad, vav ayin dalet. Sometimes it's translated as the tent of the meeting, or something like that, which always reminds me of American Indians somehow. But Olmoed is good enough for us. So he says, v'no'adeti shalom l'vnei Yisrael, v'nichdash b'chvodi. Chvodi. Kavod is a word that describes the presence of God. Right, what exactly that presence is and how it's distinguished from some other presence is not so much the concern of Rashi. It's the concern of Kabbalists. The Kabbalists were very much involved with that word kavod. But since Rashi is not going to deal with it, so we won't deal with it either. But he quotes the Midrash, and the Midrash says, Al tichre tikri bichvodi ela b'mechubadi. Now, what is al tikre? What is al tikre? Al tikre, as you know, that Hebrew is written in the Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah is written unvocalized, and because there are no vowels in Hebrew, you can read words in different ways. Of course, there is a kind of proper way to read the words when you lame, when someone reads from the Torah. But that doesn't mean, but the system, the way Hebrew works, as opposed, for example, to English, where there are vowels, you may have heard. A, E, I, O, U are vowels, which mean that they change the way you pronounce the consonants that precede the vowels. You could say ba, you could say bo, you could say be. Right? That's a consonant, plus a vowel, a, or, eh. And Hebrew didn't have vowels. So eventually, at quite a late date in Jewish history, let's say the 7th, the 8th century CE, they decided that enough was enough and they invented vowels in the Jewish way. In the Jewish way, not only did they invent vowels, but they invented three different systems of vocalization so that people who traveled from one place to another couldn't read what the other people had written. That was very clever. But eventually the system that we use today universally, which is called the Tiberian vocalization system, one. And today, the other systems are grist for the scholarly mill. You know, scholars generally deal with things that have either been forgotten or were never very important. So, scholars do that. We all use, we, Ashkenazim and Sfaradim and Temanim, everybody uses the system that is called Tiberian. That's what it's called. Why it's called Tiberian, I cannot explain. Because it did not really come from Tiberius. But okay, it's called Tiberian. I mean, there's a reason. But I don't know it. So, it says, Al tikrei b'chvodi elu v'mechubadi. Now this is a little bit more than an al tikrei. This is because al tikrei would mean change the vocalization. But here you're actually changing the word. It's like the Chachamim said, well, since you could change the vocalization, so we'll change the word. In other words, they saw this word, kvodi, as having a remez in it that would explain this pasuk that we are struggling with. Amalo Moshe Aaron, Aaron Achi, so Moshe Rabbeinu said to Aaron, my brother, Yodea Yiti She Yiktadei Shabayit B'miyudaav Shel Makom. I knew that this sanctification would have to take place. What does sanctification mean in this case? That somehow all of Bnei Yisrael would understand that the presence of God in that place prevents them from stepping over the boundary, from doing something that God doesn't want them to do. Right, that had to be driven home somehow. Or in the language of the Ramban, as we said, that the Mishkan was Har Sinai. The Mishkan was Har Sinai. See, just like a Har Sinai, you couldn't go beyond a certain point, so too in the Mishkan. But this idea had to be driven home that this was the will of God. Because the people could misunderstand and say, all the mitzvot that God gives us in relationship to the Mishkan, the Beit HaMikdash, and the Korbanot, are commandments. But who says I can't do it my own way? Who says I can't do it enthusiastically? Who says I can't come at a time when the halakha doesn't demand it of me? So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Aaron, Yodei Yiti Shikadei Shabayit B'miyudav Shel Makom V'Hayiti Savur Obi Obecha. And I knew that it would be me or you. One of them, because I, Moshe Rabbeinu, was the Kohen Gadol until the eighth day of the Miluim. And now you, Aaron, a Kohen, have become the Gadol. So who's the person who should be the, should teach this lesson to Bnei Yisrael? You or me? Achshav ro'ali shehem gedolim mimeni u'mimcha. Nadav aviv, it was neither you, Aaron, nor me, Moshe. Who was it? Nadav Aviv. Now I see, Moshe Rabbeinu said, they are greater than you and I. So, according to the Medrash, what's happening is something that had to happen. And Moshe Rabbeinu knew that it had to happen, but he didn't know who the actors in this had to happen were. The second thing that we learn is that Nadav Aviv did this, according to this Medrash, did this because of their greatness, and not because of their small-mindedness, or not because of what the Medrash says, maybe they were a little drunk, but even a little drunk could be explained as having something to do with greatness. It was their greatness that brought them there, and so Moshe Rabbeinu said, I see now that they are greater than you or than I. And it's hard to understand what Moshe Rabbeinu is talking about. Let's look at the Medrash at the bottom of the page. The Medrash says, in the second line, Ze'ad Dibur, Ne'emar Moshe B'Sinai V'lo Nodah Lo Ad Sheba Ma'aseh Liyado. Amar Moshe L'Aaron Achi, בסיני נאמר לי שאני עתיד לקדש את הבית הזה, ובאדם גדול אני מקדשו. that somehow there was a hint that someone would have to give up his life in order that the people should understand what the Beit HaMikdash is really about. He says, "Vayidi sabur shema obi obecha habayit hazeh mitkadesh." I thought it would be you, Aaron, or me, Moshe Rabbeinu. עכשיו שתי בניך גדולים ממני ממך. כיוון ששמע אהרון שבניו יראי שמיים הם שתק. When he heard that his sons were greatly devoted to heaven, יראי שמיים, he had nothing to say. וקיבל שכר שתיקתו. And he received, that's why the Torah says, שתק. Because he was given schar. What the schar was exactly is at the end. That the next parasha is a parasha that is directed from God to Aaron. That was the greatest schar, the greatest reward that you could get in those days, in that world. So you see that there is this idea. Like, we don't know. If you look at the first Rashi, the Rashi we skipped, Rabbi Elazar Omer lo meitu b'nei Aaron ela al yedei shehoru halacha b'fnei Moshe Rabban. So Nadav and Avihu were bad guys. They said, it's mutter. And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't tell them it's mutter, right? Didn't say you could bring in an Eish Zara into the Beit HaMikdash. They said, we'll do it. So that's Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yishmael omer shtuya yayin nechlesu lebikdash. Teda shachar mitratan izhiya notorim shalei kanzu shtuya yayin lebikdash. Vashal omelach shayla ben bayit. I did the story in the Midrash that somebody had, a king had a servant. And the servant served the king devotedly. But then one day the servant went. And he stood in front of, he went window shopping. And he saw one of these electronic stores, and he went into the electronic stores, and his eyes were bulging out of his head. And the king saw that, and he killed him. So, at the end you say, we don't know why the king killed him, but we know that he didn't like the fact that he was in the electronic store. That's what the Medrash says, changing electronic stores to something else. So it would seem from the first Rashi that Nadav and Avihu were bad guys. And it would seem from the second Rashi that Nadav and Avihu had to happen. And there had to be somebody. And the question for Moshe Rabbeinu was, would it be Moshe Rabbeinu or be Aaron HaKohen? And he was surprised only to find out that it was Nadav and Avihu, but the Medrash Rashi. And the Medrash clearly state that Nadav and Avihu were righteous, were greater than Moshe and Aaron. So what is it? I mean, is it possible somehow to resolve all of this? So I want to tell you something that's in something that the Mei Shiloach said. There's a Gemara in Chagiga. I'm sorry, the back page of the Makarot didn't come out. So you have to look it up yourself. There's a Gemara in Chagiga. On Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Chagiga is an unfortunate masechet. They don't learn in yeshivot. And so the only place you can learn is in Daf Yomi. So in 4 years or 5 years, you can come and learn this Daf in Chagiga. So there's a drush in Chagiga, Dorash Rova. Rova's learning with his Talmidim, and somebody asked him about a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. What is it about, this pasuk in Shir HaShirim? What is the pasuk? Pasuk is in Paragimel in Shir HaShirim. The pasuk says, just a second, I had it a second. Ma yafu pa'amayich ba'ne'alim bat nadiv. Ma yafu. Yafu is yafe. Pa'amayich. Pa'amayim are footsteps. Right? Ba'ne'alim. Na'alim, I guess, is like na'alayim. How beautiful it is to watch you walk. You know, like the on the simple level, you know, you see that the lover is in love with every part of the beloved. Right? That's the way it sounds in Shir HaShirim. And the pasuk ends with the words Bat Nadiv. Bat Nadiv. Now, what does the word Nadiv mean? Kol Nadiv Leiv. The people who brought donations to the Mishkan in the desert were called Nidivei Leif. They had big hearts. They had hearts that directed them to share, to give up the wealth that they had, at least in part, and donate to the Mishkan. So read the pasuk again. Ma'yafu pa'amayich ba'na'alim beit bat nadiv. So Rava says, you know what this means? What this pasuk is, remember feet, shoes, yafeh, bat nadiv. Right, so Rava says, you know what this pasuk is really saying? We're talking about pshat. We're not talking about, you know, mystical interpretations or about the love of the Shekhinah for B'nai Yisrael. Don't even, the Simeon, it's got to mean something. Right? Why did he say that? So Rava says, Kama Na'im Raglehem Shel Yisrael, how lovely are the feet of B'nai Yisrael B'sha'asha Olim LaRegel, when they go to Yerushalayim on the Shalosh Regalim, to fulfill the mitzvah of Aliyah LaRegel. So we see that contrast, right? When the angels came to Avram Avinu, he offered them the opportunity to wash their feet. Because, as Chazal said, and as we mentioned before, their feet were covered with the dust of idolatry. Because wherever you went, it was idolatrous. Not that they performed idolatrous actions, but every place they went, there was idolatry. Rava says, there's one exception to this idea that feet often take you to the wrong place, and that is Aliyah LaRegel. And about Aliyah LaRegel, you can say not only you are doing the right thing, or that you're happily doing the right thing, but you could say your feet are doing the right thing. Only about Aliyah LaRegel. That's what Rava said. And so he said, Kama Na'im, how beautiful are the feet of Yisrael when they go up on the Regalim to the Beit HaMikdash. And then the question was, what is Bat Nadiv? The pasuk ends with those two words, Bat, daughter, Nadiv, somebody who is charitable, somebody who gives happily. He says, Rava, remember Rava? Rava, he says, Bito shel Avram Avinu shenikra Nadiv. They suddenly become like the children of Avram Avinu. He was called Nadiv. Shenema Nadive Amim Ne'esvu Im Elokei Avraham. Nadive Amim get together. They all to get together with Avram Avinu. With Avram Avinu, this is a pasuk in Tehillim, right? This is a pasuk. Tehillim, Im Elokei Avraham, only with Avraham. Only Avraham is called a Nadiv. Only Avraham is called a Nadiv. Rashi says, Shenikra Nadiv, Al Shem, what was the charity that Avraham Avinu gave? I mean, the Nadiv wave in the desert, they gave money for the Mishkan. But why is Avraham Avinu called Nadiv? So Rashi says, Shenikra Nadiv, Al Shem Shenadvu Nidavo Libo Lahakir Bar'o. that Avraham Avinu was the one who on his own, he went and he said, there's got to be a creator in the world. There's got to be God in the world. And he went on his own and he did this. Based on this drasha, the Meshilach, remember the Meshilach, Hishbitzer? He always has interesting things to say about, in the end of the first volume of the Meshilach, at the end of the first volume, there's a section about this Gemara in Chagiga, if you look it up. And the Meshilach says, I'll summarize it, which is always a bad idea, but I'll summarize it the way I want to summarize it. And if you want to learn it yourself and come and complain, you can, but I'm not so worried. But Adarabba, I mean, full disclosure. What the Meshilach says is, you know, there's an essential difference between a ger convert, and someone who's born Jewish. He says, what's our essential difference? I mean, of course, a convert. I mean, there's a born Jewish. Right? He says, no. He says, you don't understand. A convert has this great opportunity to do something that he wanted to do, to be what he wants to be. Right? He has this kind of special enthusiasm that somebody who's born Jewishly, or born and brought up regular, I mean, you don't have that. Like somebody who's Jewish can't get up when he's 15 and say, yeah, I'm going to become Jewish. Too bad. You're already Jewish. Right? You can't have that kind of enthusiasm. It's denied you. And everybody knows that sometimes gerim, you know, very often put those of us who are not gerim to shame. Either with their enthusiasm, or with their devotion, or their interest in details, or whatever it is. So, the Meshilo says, listen, we have two kinds of genes inside of us. We have the Ger gene from Avraham Avinu. And only Avraham Avinu, because Avraham Avinu's children were the children of Avraham Avinu. So they were different. They didn't have to discover God. They were taught about God. Avraham Avinu, they miss Yitzchak and Yaakov. So every one of us, according to the Meshilach, has this in us. We have this yesod, it's called like this foundation, this firmament of being the way we are, because we've always been that way to some extent, right? Our fathers, our grandfathers, mothers, and grandmothers, all the way back as far as we can imagine, have always been this way. But then there's in us, there's this Avraham Avinu gear, Avraham Avinu a gene. It says, let's be, well, what can we say about ourselves? Let's be more than. Let's not just do what the Torah demands of us, but let's go beyond what the Torah demands of us. We have it, each one of us, inside of us. We have that according to the Meshilach. And so what Rava said is that it's built into the Torah. It's built into Rava. Remember Rava? Abaye and Rava? Rava says it's built into the Torah. What's built in the Torah? Well, it's built in the Torah. You have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do the other thing. But then you can also be extra. You could do extra. You could go to Yerushalayim on the Regalim. You could do something really hard. You could do something that's not regular, that's extraordinary, and you can be that way. You can be that way. So that it's reasonable. It's reasonable for religious people, especially young religious people. I mean, maybe there's a contradiction here saying young and reasonable. But it's reasonable for young people, as we see today, to explore a more devoted kind of devotion, a more dedicated kind of mitzvah personality. And whether you call it today in Israel, whether you call it Habakkuk, or you call it Na-Na-Nach, or you call it Merkaz Arav, or you call it Har Hamor, or whatever you call it, whatever you call it, all amounts to the same thing, that, you know, people looked around and they said, it's all kind of old and tired, isn't it? It's all like it's been this way forever. Maybe it could be a little different. Maybe it could be a little different. So everybody finds, everybody gravitates to a little bit, not everybody. The ones who gravitate to the little bit of difference that they think is meaningful to them. But according to the Meshiloach, that's who we are. We are this combination of let's do it the way it's been done always, and let's fight for the independent spirit. And so if you connect the Meshiloach, the Meshiloach doesn't say what I'm about to say. Well, if he said what I said above, that's probably disputable, right? But I think he did. But what I'm about to say is based on the Meshiloach, but he didn't say it. So according to Rashi, and according to the Medrash, Nadav Avihu, if they were righteous, had it in them to say that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring us to bring a Ketoret in the Mishkan at appropriate times, that it's not unreasonable that my desire to be closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu should enable me to bring a Ketoret even at an inappropriate time. And so that the Torah had to teach Nadav Avihu, and through Nadav Avihu had to teach all of Bnei Yisrael, that that there were limits. Even enthusiasm has limits. Even a desire, a holy desire, to be closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu has limits. And that's why there's a certain kind of tension. There was even limits are not always clearly defined. They don't always present us with limits, right? Limits of time, and limits of place, and limits of action. It would seem that they are very precise, but we all know that zmanim are not precise. And shiurim, and we just on Pesach, right? You know, Pesach is always as always the spirit. You know, if you have sons or in yeshiva or daughters in seminary, and you try to have a seder, and you get up to the question of what's the shiur, you might as well go home. You know, I mean, it's like generally speaking, the children involved don't know what they're talking about. And if you could see them 20 years later, you'd see that they would be saying the same thing to their children about the annoyance. The same thing is true about Zmanim. It's very hard to figure out. How come you daven this time? How come you daven that time? Can you daven early Mincha? Can you not daven early Mincha? What about the Sviyas HaOmer? I mean, it's like, you can argue about it. You can argue about all these things. Chabad, Friday night, they make Kiddush 4 hours later than everybody else. And they say, of course, they're right. Everybody else is wrong. But, that's what I mean is that limits are also a subject, you know, for enthusiasm and greater attachment. So we see Nadav Avihu, according to the Medrash that we learned that was recorded in Rashi, were the righteous ones who were chosen to give this lesson to Am Yisrael. That even though the Mishkan was the meeting place between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu, and Am Yisrael, it was only at the times designated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that those meetings could take place. And similarly, even though mitzvahs in the Mishkan, doing a mitzvah, bringing a korban, bringing the Ketoret, was a reflection of the enthusiasm of the people, that enthusiasm could not spill over and become a matir for doing things in the wrong time at the wrong place. And the lesson was taught us by Nadav Avihu, according to the Medrash, quoted by Rashi, were righteous. They were chosen because of their righteousness. And so to say, if for them it didn't work, it's not going to work for anybody else. And it was a lesson that everybody would learn and would know. And this all harkens back to the Ramban, who taught us that the limits at Matan Torah, the Gvulot, right, the Gvulot, for which there was a very severe punishment declared by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for anybody who breaches those boundaries and limits, those boundaries and limits were part of Matan Torah. It wasn't just that there's a parallel between the way the Torah was given and the way the Mishkan was organized. It was rather that even though we strive, at least that we say we strive, for a more unified feeling about ourselves in the world of God, with God, like we somehow would like to feel that we are closer to God. But that closeness in Olam Hazeh seems to have limits. I can tell you maybe a takeoff on something that Rav Huttner wrote. You know, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai the first time, he ate Shnei Luchot Avanim. Two tablets. So you say, how come he had two tablets? Why couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the Aseres HaDibros on one tablet? And what? Okay, Aseres HaDibros, so they would be engraved on this stone. Why were there two of them? And so Rav Huttner points out that, after all, we know that one tablet, the first five Dibros are Ben Adam Lamakom, and the second are Ben Adam Lechaveiro. So the first represents our relationship to heaven, the second our relationship to man, is that they could. It's not automatic that they come together. It's not something that is part of the Torah. It's something we have to work at. Something we have to accomplish on our own, this kind of fusing together the Bein Adam Lamakom and the Bein Adam Lachaveiro. So that all of these ideas, I think, come together somehow. I think that the Ishbitzer would have mentioned Nadav Avihu if he would have remembered. Or maybe he did, who knows? We don't, it's not a complete work by any means. But his reference to the Gemara Chagiga is that there was like a place for exuberance in the system, which is going up to Yerushalayim every year when your feet are beautiful. They have nothing to do. They don't connect to anything which is idolatrous. Have a good Shabbos. I want to have a marv. Can we have a marv?